Hi, welcome to Season 2 of the Let's K-12 Better podcast. This podcast is a project between Mama Capes and her kids.
Hi!
In our podcast, we will cover a variety of subjects involving K-12 education and family life.
We will talk about the ways that parents, kids, and educators can improve K-12 education and family life.
We encourage you to join our conversation on social media using the hashtag #LetsK12Better.
Let's jump into Season 2, Episode 10 of the Let's K12 Better podcast.
When you think about your school librarian, you might envision a person that loves books. I mean, they sit in a room full of books all day, right? Wrong. The school librarian is not only a book wizard, but an invaluable resource in an ever-evolving world of information in books and online.
Libraries are so much more than a storage room for books. In fact, according to the 2020 report from the American Library Association, libraries exist to provide equitable access to resources and information, provide the necessary tools to equip young people and adults with the digital literacy skills to navigate a post-truth world, facilitate discussions about our values and what we should and should not censor, and engage learners in non-traditional communal learning experiences while also supporting wellness and creating safe spaces. And libraries facilitate parent engagement and parent learning opportunities in the school. According to the 2019 Gallup poll quoted in the report, visiting the library is the most common communal activity Americans engage in by far. But that was pre-pandemic. How has the role of the librarian evolved during a time when visiting public spaces comes with health risks? How have school librarians worked to support online and hybrid learning during COVID-19? We sat down with Dr. Corey Hall, curriculum developer, librarian, former middle school teacher, and 2019 American Library Association emerging leader. She brings 24 years of experience in education as both a librarian and an educator, and a strong background in education technology and information literacy. We hope that this interview answers some of these questions for you. We are so delighted to have Corey Hall join us on the podcast today. Corey is a curriculum developer, a librarian, and former middle school teacher. Corey, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, you're amazing. I just want to brag about you a bit. You have like 24 years of experience in education, both as a librarian and an educator, right? So I think that gives you a unique perspective that we're excited to bring on the podcast today.
Thank you. Yes, I love K-12. I love education. I love kids. So yeah, let's talk.
All right. Awesome. So let's talk a bit about librarians, right? You know, librarians have a great purpose in schools. They are the holders in many ways of all the information, right? So let's talk a little bit about like how you see the role of the librarian in the school first.
So I want to start out by saying school librarians are probably the unsung heroes in schools. I was a librarian for the last 8 years in a middle school. And when COVID hit, my district decided to eliminate the school librarian positions. And unfortunately, I think that was a really big mistake for them. We were a bridge that I don't even know that they realized was there. Mm-hmm. So school librarians, we are kind of the safe space in the school because our entire goal, our entire essence is everybody is welcome and we're going to find a place for you. So in my library, you know, the GSA was part of our library. I worked very hard to find books that reflected our kids. And I was in a very, very rural, very conservative district. So, you know, finding LGBTQ positive books and putting them in there for the kids and just a safe space for those kids who just couldn't handle anxiety and, mm-hmm. and depression. We had safe spaces for them. It just is it's not just about the books. The books are huge and I'll talk books with you for hours, but I think libraries actually are more about relationships and safety for kids.
I actually just love what you said. Just seeing how you see the space itself as a place that is welcoming and warm and loving for all kinds of readers and learners. So I just want to say that I appreciate that. I also, like, in my own mind, when I think of librarians, I think of them as like honeybees, right? Like they're like collecting the information and then they're cross-pollinating and then
That's
they're
great.
Connecting, right? So like, you know, in my, like, you guys have a high honor in my heart.
That's actually an excellent analogy. I love that because one of the cool things I got to do was co-teach with the teachers across the subject. So I wasn't in the library all that much. I was actually out in the classrooms more often. So I would bring technology into a math classroom and we would do like virtual field trips, or I had Spheros and I'd take them and teach them how to code, or, you know, just lots of like back and forth. And, you know, there was a lot of book talks and that kind of thing. But honestly, it was more about what you just said, like just connecting, just mm-hmm. connecting the pieces. So I loved that. I missed that so much.
So more on connecting, right? And more on building bridges. I think, you know, a lot of parents have misconceptions about what the library or the media center, mm-hmm. right, is all about. And I think it's just really beautiful how we've both worked together to put it into context, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how librarians serve as a bridge between home and school.
Absolutely. So there's a couple of different ways that can happen. I don't know that it always happens, but this is how it can happen. Great librarians will do things like hold events where parents can come into the school library, and they'll do things like teaching them how to access their kids' online records, the catalogs, or even how to access like OverDrive and Libby and Sora. Technology nights where they come in and they practice coding, or they practice just doing the same things that the kids are doing, 3D printing, that sort of thing. But then also it's like sharing information through a really good online portal. So a website that provides, you know, I tried to put internet safety information for my parents, book recommendations, but also we have to play a role in educating parents about the fact that censorship was a big issue in my district because it was a conservative district. So there was a piece that I had to very gently play in, you know, your beliefs may not be your child's beliefs, and your child may need something different than what you're expecting them to read. So anyway, that's how I would do it. It's just providing opportunities for parents to be there virtually right now, unfortunately, but in person is the best, and lots of information back and forth, sharing out information.
I think like being an advocate for kids, right? Even like letting their parents know, like, I think that was really great. Like saying like your beliefs may be a little bit different from your child's beliefs. You know, I think as parents, we are working through understanding that we've essentially created an autonomous being, right? With their own ideas and opinions.
It's hard, but yes, that's true.
It's so hard. The struggle is so real.
So hard when they're not what we are. It's, but I will say something that was really difficult for me to watch, and I was so honored to be a part of. We had several students who were really struggling with identity and both with sexual orientation. We had a few that were dealing with gender identity issues. And, you know, what? Here's an example. I had an eighth grader whose parent threatened to kick them out of their house if their daughter publicly came out as being gay. And it was one of those things where I just had to, you know, very quietly be a support for her and provide her those resources. And, you know, we would talk books and we would talk life and just that, like I said, just that safety.
Yeah.
That safety. So, yeah. And I, not that I want to go against the parents, but you know, when you look at self-harm and suicide rates for, you know, kids who are questioning, it's so high. And I just cannot be I just cannot not provide that support and information.
So, yeah. lots of empathy happening and social emotional learning. Yes. I want to bring that to the fore right now. I also just want to encourage parents who like have kids who are experiencing anything with their identity to listen. So as you hear from a licensed professional,
it's so important. So important.
Yeah. So we're going to move into COVID-19 remote learning. Mm-hmm. Like it happened. Yes. It's still happening.
Yes.
Right. So let's talk about you mentioned that your district eliminated the Media Center Library Information Programming.
Yes.
And departments.
Yes.
So what new innovations have librarians adopted during this time of remote learning?
So actually I can speak to this because March 13th last year. So what is that exactly a year ago?
Literally 363 days or 4 days.
That was my last day in a school library. Mm. So that was the day that COVID shut down our district. And we went into emergency mode. We all, were sent home. The kids were sent home. I had actually been on a field trip that day with the gifted group, and we immediately flipped from being in person to being nothing for about 2 weeks. But our role at that time as librarians, we were immediately developing professional development for accessing databases and, getting online information to kids and, how do you still teach your technology pieces? And so, huge just mind shift that had to happen in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, we started full remote online learning. So at that point, as librarians, we were supporting teachers. We were in their online classrooms in Schoology. We were helping them develop the Bitmoji classrooms, and we were doing all kinds of the technology in the background. But as we're moving kind of forward into year two or one and a half of this, it's so much bigger than that now. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I'm seeing, and I just love, my heart hurts that I'm not able to be on the forefront of this now, is lending libraries for technology. Mm. So, sending home spheros with activities, or, sending little bits home and letting the students have the access to the technology, even if they're not in school. And there are a lot of online versions of those things as well, like Microbit, it has an online website. And that in the librarians, that's what we do now. Like, it's not just books. Like, Makerspace was a huge part of my job. So it's moving Makerspace from being a physical space to being a virtual space. So yeah, definitely lots and lots of opportunities for technology integration, even in a virtual space.
I just want to ask a follow-up of what do you keep in mind, because obviously in homes, everyone's situation is very different.
Yes, absolutely. Right?
There's a range of need, and then there's a range of have, right? And so what do you think about when you, or what should librarians think about, mm-hmm. or have they thought about when they're presenting these opportunities for families?
So definitely we're thinking about that. And when we were shut down last year, in March, the immediate thought and what we had to do was, does every student have access to the internet? That was the first thing we did. So we were a one-to-one district. So the kids already had the technology. Every child had a laptop. So that wasn't an issue. But they didn't have internet access. So we immediately purchased hotspots, and then we checked them out to kids and families just like we do books. And then if we had kids, we had many families who were living in homeless situations, they were indefinitely checked out to those families. And then we also connected with the community library to make sure that their Wi-Fi was stayed on, mm-hmm. so that students, even if they were closed, students could still be outside of the library and access the internet. So we were definitely in fast forward, trying to make sure that every student had access to what they needed. In terms of remediation and enrichment, it was all kinds of we're going to get, the widest variety of books available. Even sending them home and I can't remember the last day, we just let kids come in and take as many books as they wanted. And mm-hmm. we didn't even count or care. We just were take the books. And that's really what we did. We just wanted to make sure. And then one more day we brought them in after we were sent home and did the exact same thing. Dump all the books here. We'll take care of it later. Grab 10 more books. That's because the public libraries were closed at that time. So that's kind of how we attacked the whole idea of equity and making sure that all of our kids were accounted for and no one fell through the cracks. That's what we were doing.
So again, I'm going to go back to my honeybee analogy.
I love it. I'm going to have to make that my spirit animal.
Listen,
I love it.
Y'all were a hive mind solving civic problems for real, you know, like this. I mean, I really think that especially at the beginning of this pandemic, a lot of people didn't even know, like, okay, are we even going to come back in face to face and see each other again, right? So I just find it really, really awesome that you guys, you know, librarians have figured out a way to continue making sure that learning and resources and epiphany are available to our students even during these times.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. So speaking of that, we've talked about so many things, but let's talk about the fact that you published the AASL, Developing Inclusive Learners and Citizens Activity Guide, with other emerging ALL leaders, right?
Yes.
And you guys also have a framework that accompanies that. So first of all, can you tell people like how cool, you know, being an ALA emerging leader is before we get into the guide and the framework? Like, what is that?
Okay, so I have to tell you, it was one of the biggest like excitement things that have probably ever happened to me. Emerging leaders, they pick basically one from every state every year.
Who is they?
Oh, I'm sorry, AASL, which is the American Association of School Librarians. I may have flipped two of those, but yeah. So it's the nationwide school librarian association. It falls under ALA, which is the American Library Association. So AASL has basically an award program, and every year they pick one librarian from each state. So I was the Pennsylvania representative. And then we met twice in person, and then we were assigned groups and we were given topics that we were then told, you know, we need to create a project. And our project was diversity. That was essentially what we were given. And we were told that we needed to use the AASL standards as our framework. So then our entire goal was to create a handbook for teachers and librarians that would help them meet the needs of as many students as possible. So we were looking at diversity and inclusiveness in every way that we could think of, and providing activities. And it was an awesome time. My team was amazing. We were as diverse as they come. I wish I could tell you the awesomeness of my team. It was like, you know, me, middle-aged white lady. And then we had like a 26-year-old African-American brand new librarian. We had a 55-year-old gay man. Like, it was like the coolest. We had a woman who was like, you know, fervently Jewish and like sharing about her culture. And it was like the coolest rainbow of people that I don't know how we wound up together and became such close friends. Like, it was just an amazing experience. And we all brought our own experiences into it. It was just fabulous. It was just fabulous.
So first of all, you're talking about experiences that like a lot of people, what I find these days, unfortunately, do not get, right? So like, not to just go off topic, but we're going to go off topic.
Let's go off topic. Let's go for it.
So like, you have been immersed in an experience that a lot of people professionally either don't get or don't take, right? Where you get to work across differences and ideological differences and cultural differences. Why was that valuable for you?
Oh my gosh, I cannot even tell you, because I definitely came into the experience with my lens. Now, my lens is a little bit different because I came from an adoptive family of six, and we're all different colors and different orientations, and we have all kinds of things in my family. But even so, I have my lens that I know. Mm-hmm. I was challenged in so many ways. And I remember going out to dinner with my team, and just, we were so respectful of each other, but we challenged each other. And there's one librarian in our group. Her name is Bianca, one of the smartest women I have ever encountered. And her life experience as a single mom and as a person of color, she just challenged me, and she taught me so much. And she was so open to just honest questions. Like, okay, Bianca, tell me, just like, why is this different for you than it is for me? And it was just amazing. you know, and then having somebody who struggled as a teenager with LGBTQ issues, and then, you know, he grew into it, and now he's a super successful top of the, he's like at the top of the state library system now. I mean, it was just amazing to have this group of people, and we just really grew to love each other. And like I said, not one of us is the same. We all had different religious beliefs, like significantly different religious beliefs, like political beliefs. We were like this, and we just loved our team. We're still working together, by the way. And this awesome. We were 2019 emerging leaders, and we're still working together. So it has been an amazing experience.
That is so fantastic. So then obviously all of y'all are well suited to put this developing inclusive learners and citizens activity guide.
It was so pretty great.
Let's talk about this. Like, what's in the guide and in the framework? You know, what did you guys pour into that? Any advice that you have for people using it too?
Sure. So it is a little bit probably overwhelming when you're first thinking of this whole, you know, equity, diversity, and inclusion phrase. I mean, it's everywhere right now. And what does it mean? What are you supposed to do with that? And that's kind of what we were hoping to accomplish with this guide, is breaking that down into bite-sized chunks that were digestible. Mm-hmm. So when we looked at our standards, when we looked at what we were trying to accomplish, if you'll look at the framework, you know, it goes through what are those the most important things, how do we reach different students in different ways. It's just that idea of like trying to reach every student. So the guide itself goes through each of the frameworks, and then it gives you activities and lesson plans, books that relate to what we're talking about. Then we do scenarios based on, what do you call that? Like an avatar, you know, like we kind of created an avatar of different people and put them in the situation and gave you like examples of what they could do in that situation. So we had a lot of, it was a hard work. That was really hard work, but we are so proud of what we've come up with, and they published it on the website, and it's available freely to anybody who wants it. You know, we're just really, really proud of what we put together.
Can you share a bit about like with D&I work, right? Some of the challenges are like, who all gets to be included? Did we leave anyone out? What stories are more important than others or perceived as more important than others, right? So can you talk about some of the challenges in making like choices of what you guys put in?
Yes, that is a great question. I don't know that we did do a perfect job. I don't know that you can do a perfect job. I think that we did the very best we could thinking about our own student bodies, and did we represent everybody that we teach? We had a lot of like hashing that out and talking. We also had the opportunity to work with author Ellen Oh, and she writes middle grades books and also works a lot with EDI. And she did a panel discussion with us at the AASL conference. And that was one of the things we hashed out as well. Like how is it, you know, we talked about the idea of, you know, can a white author write about issues facing Native American people, or just all of that. And I don't know that there is an answer. I don't think we have an answer yet. But the fact is we're talking about it. So I don't know if I can give you a solid answer on that. I just think that we need to be open to the conversation, and also to do it with kindness and knowing that we're all hopefully coming at it from the motivation of, we want everyone included. We want every perspective included. And we're not there, but we're working.
Yeah,
we're trying.
I love that. I love the fact that it's all about making sure that we have the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, humanity, we'd love to have everything tied up in a bow perfectly. It's done. I'm finished. On to the next thing. But a lot of this work, especially with diversity and inclusion, requires a long road, lots of conversations, pain, right? Pulling
yes.
up pain.
Yes. And it is. I'm telling you, some of the conversations I have with my team, I will never be able to express that, the gratitude, just being able to sit down with a group of people talking about hard things, but to do it with kindness and to have my assumptions and my biases challenged, which is really difficult. Mm-hmm. Like that's thrown out there all the time right now. And it's thrown out there all the time. It is hard to be faced with your own biases that you didn't even know were there. Mm-hmm. So being able to do that, to have a colleague look you in the eye and say, can I push back on that? And to be open to that, that's what I just wish we could do that the world, but the world. You know, in the field right now, especially, you know, can we have those hard conversations without attacking each other, without immediately ripping a book off the shelf? Like, let's have the conversation together.
Yeah. You know, okay. So I'm going to ask you a hard question then.
Go for it.
Let's talk about just real quick about Dr. Seuss.
Oh, right? I knew you were going to ask me I knew it.
It was my bonus question. I was like, dun, 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 surprise.
I knew that was coming. No, it wasn't a surprise. I had a feeling. So I'm just going to give you my exactly how I feel about
this. And it's not everyone's answer in the whole world. No. I want to preface that. Right.
No, like, this is Corey's answer, which doesn't mean much in the world, but
it means something to me since you're on my show.
So here's how I feel about that. I am a very big anti-censor person. Mm-hmm. And here's why. Because books of any kind, whether it be Dr. Seuss, whether it be Little House on the Prairie, whether it be, you know, there's so many books that have been brought up right now for challenges, they bring up conversations. So to me, why would we take a book off the shelf that would open up an amazing conversation? Now, I probably would be more cautious as I'm checking it out to have the conversation, but it's such a rich opportunity for us to say, okay, this is in this book. What do you think about that today? What has changed? You know, how can we look at this perspective differently? So I'm not a fan of just ripping things off the shelf and just being like, oh, can't expose our kids to that. Let them think, let them learn. Let's have those conversations. If we want the adults to have the conversations, then we better let the kids have the conversations before they become adults. So that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer you wanted, but that's how
okay,
I feel.
So Corey, can I just say that I totally agree. And that actually my kids and I talked about this, I would say in two episodes ago, we talked about blackface in media. And so we talked about how people just immediately, as you're saying, like rip it off the shelf or put that episode away and like shelter it, you know, without having that historical conversation.
Yes.
Why are these images being used this way? What purpose did they serve within the context of that time period?
Yes.
How have we evolved since then? How have we not evolved since then, right? Like,
absolutely.
What is, you know, so like, thank you so much for that.
Oh, and I'll throw in another one real quick that I was just reading about. Eric Carle, he did The Hungry Little Caterpillar. Mm-hmm. He has another book and it shows the human body without clothes on. Now, I am talking about the most cartoony bodies you'll ever see. There was this huge conversation in library circles about pulling it off the shelf. And or librarians would be, or whoever was it, would be coloring them out with black marker or, you know, putting
tape
some kind of, exactly. And my thought on that again is why? Let's have the conversation. Why are we teaching kids to be embarrassed about their body parts? We're not like there was nothing inappropriate going on. So yeah, it frustrates me so greatly. And the worst ones are when we pull LGBTQ books off the shelf. And I can't even go there without getting extremely emotional because you just don't know how many kids are struggling and searching, and they connect with these authors who have lived these experiences and they see themselves in these books. And to just walk in and be like, I don't agree with that lifestyle, I want that book off the shelf, doesn't allow for kids who need those books to get those books. So I could go off on that for another hour. But
so it sounds like we need to have a larger conversation as a global or national or even local communities about, you know, when we believe that images, whether if it's racial images, whether it's sex, whether it's sexual orientation and gender identity, right? Like, how do we have important conversations as adults about imagery and how they impact our kids? And then also, how do we have conversations or facilitate conversations amongst our students about this and what they think, and providing them the space to come to their own conclusions, obviously in safe and meaningful ways.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for taking my bonus question, Corey.
I knew it was coming.
So I have just one more question about increasing accessibility to STEM, right? You know, so what are some tips that you have to ensure that we incorporate STEM at home and at school, right? And how do we, again, increase accessibility to such an important subject area?
So this is really where I am, right? Like, this is my corner right now, is working in STEM and getting it out to kids. and to families. So one of the things that I would say to teachers and librarians is to make sure you are making that a focus. You know, like I said, lending kits are a great way to do it, making sure that you're directing families and students to resources like Fuse, which is Little Bits Online, or, you know, microbit.org and MakeCode and that sort of thing. I also would say making sure that you're choosing curriculum that is diverse. One of the things that I've been working really hard on is curriculum that shows women in where they're underrepresented. So especially in the trades and manufacturing, I would say that has got to happen. And parents need to be really careful not to assume that their children are going to a four-year college and that's the way it's going to be. My child is not going to, you know, my child's going to be going to trade school. Like, that's something that I think is really important as well. STEM is not just college-bound kids. STEM is technology and engineering and manufacturing, not just math. I mean, you know, M is M squared. And so, yeah, just the idea of just expanding that, first of all, that it's not this one route. There are so many resources out there. If you are a parent and you want to do STEM, National Geographic, every national aquarium or every state aquarium or the national aquariums, virtual reality. I can't even tell you. Google Expeditions, which is going away soon, but until they go away, you will expose your students or your children to so many different things. Nearpod has so many virtual experiences, and most of these are free for families to use. Please get involved with your public library. They are pushing STEM right now so hard, and they want to serve their communities. If you check out your local library's website and their youth services programs, I mean, that's one of the things my company is working with, is working with public libraries to put their STEM programs in place. So, I mean, it's free. Yes. So go to the library.
Yes, that is a civic duty, everyone. I want to say that.
Go to the library. I mean, seriously, if you knew how hard, like, school librarians, we work hard. Public librarians have a whole nother.
They're doing mission. The Lord's work.
Holy smokes. They are addressing homelessness. They're addressing drug use. I mean, these are just amazing people who are just, their entire thing is serving their communities.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably my number one. Go to the daggone library.
Yes. I want to just, yes. Exclamation points behind that. For a library is a civic institution that needs to be supported, attended, participated in. So yes, all of that. Thank you, Corey, for saying that and for highlighting that. Oh my God. So we've had so much fun. This has been like just a breeze and amazing and awesome. I don't think I have to do any edits to this episode. You just killed it. But I do want to ask if there's anything that you'd like to promote or if there's anything you want our listeners to check out.
Sure. So I work for a STEM company now called STEM Education Works. They're out of Lafayette, Indiana. I would love for you to check us out on social media or our website. And our entire purpose is to connect educational technologies with K-12 STEM curriculum and then get them into the hands of kids. So we are working really hard on workforce development. We have connections with our communities. We're working with 4-H and Coder Dojos, and we're working with Boys and Girls Clubs. And so this is just really, really important to us. So please check us out, STEM Education Works. We have resources on the website, free ones. We also have all kinds of materials and products for you to look at. And then curriculum is my baby. So please, you know, feel free to check out what we have for curriculum.
Yes. Okay. This was super, super awesome. Corey, I just really want to thank you for just highlighting how I see librarians and just reaffirming that, again, you guys are the honeybees of education, just pollinating and connecting and getting people together. So thank you.
I love it. I'm going to have to add that as a tattoo for my, you know, I have many, but I'll have to add that one as my spirit animal.
I'm so excited. Dr. Corey Hall illuminates for all of us the lengths to which librarians go to ensure that all learners get the information they need. We've included links to follow Dr. Hall on social media, as well as links to her book and other resources in the show notes. We've also linked the 2020 State of America's Libraries report in the show notes as well. We challenge families and educators to think more about the benefits of their school library. How has your school library evolved as a result of the pandemic? What ways can you best support the programs and initiatives coming out of your school library or media center? What's missing from the curriculum, and how can the school library and media center best support that? Does your public library work with your school? And if not, how might you work to bridge that gap? If you have any cool epiphanies you'd like to share, please leave them in the comments or share them with us on social media.
Each episode, we will share quotes that we find inspirational.
Shirley Chisholm was an American politician, educator, and author. Her quote is, "You don't make progress by standing on the sidelines, whimpering and complaining. You make progress by implementing ideas."
Shonda Rhimes is an American television producer, screenwriter, and author. Her quote, "Happiness comes from living as you need to, not as you want to. As your inner voice tells you to, happiness comes from being who you actually are instead of being who you think you're supposed to be."
Alice Walker is an American novelist, short story writer, poet, and social activist. Her quote, "In nature, nothing is perfect and everything is perfect. Trees can be contorted, bent in weird ways, and they're still beautiful."
Octavia Butler was an award-winning and renowned science fiction writer. She was the first science fiction writer to be awarded the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Fellowship. Her quote, "Intelligence does enable you to deny facts you dislike, but your denial doesn't matter. A cancer growing in someone's body will go on growing in spite of denial. And a complex combination of genes that work together to make you intelligent, as well as hierarchical will, still handicap you whether you acknowledge it or not."
Thank you for listening to the Let's K-12 Better podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe.
We want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media at Let's K-12 Better on all social media platforms, or connect with me on Twitter and Instagram at Mom of All Capes. The Let's K-12 Better podcast is available on every podcasting platform. So if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us grow. Thank you so much for listening.
See you next time.